learn a little bit. The first piece is from the Shem Mishmuel. The Parsha has multiple warnings. I mean, actually, the whole Sefer of Devarim has multiple warnings about Avodah Zarah, about idol worship. And it's actually well-placed because Moshe Rabbeinu and Rabbeinu Shem want us to be careful when we go into Eretz Yisrael, to be careful from the indigenous population, which is principally Balei Avodah Zarah. They're principally idol worshippers. So therefore there is a strong emphasis in Sefer Devarim on Avodah Zarah. And in this week's Parsha, there's one in particular, which might sound a little strange, and the Shem Mishmuel, who we've quoted many times before, the Shem Mishmuel was the son of the Avnei Nezer, the Sacher Chava Rebbe, died in 1910, and he, v'lo takim lecha matseva. We're not allowed to build a matseva, a pillar. Pillar, Rashi, matseva achat, a single pillar. Mizbeach avonim harbei, that you can do, right? In other words, there was no prohibition of building a mizbeach, but there was a prohibition of building a matseva, a one stone structure. And he writes, Rashi, afal pi shematseva hayeta ahuva bimei ha'avot. Notice, obviously, they use the matseva for idol worship. So Rashi comments that, notwithstanding the fact that in the time of the Avot, for example, Yaakov Avinu, the Torah says, Beferish made a matseva, achshav sana me'achar sha'asua rak l'avodah zara. Now it became forbidden because it is used for avodah zara. Right? V'hiksha Ramban, and he brings a question from Nachmanides, from the Ramban, sha'knanim gam b'mizbachot v'gam b'matzevot hayu nogim. The Knanim built a mizbeach, and they also built a matseva. So why is it that the Torah only proscribes against the use of a matseva? Now, by the way, just kind of let me detour a little bit. There is something that we do, that people, we used to do, that we're not allowed to do today, according to Rabbi Kivega, for the same reason. Right? Matseva is aside, but you know that I'm going to show you, I'm going to demonstrate to do like this. This might come as a surprise to you, but this is the way idol worshippers pray. And today still some, I mean, in Christian worship they pray like this. This was originally a Jewish move. And Rabbi Kivager says that one is not allowed to do this formulation with his hands because it has become an idol worshipping thing. So if you, according to Rabbi, it's not a halacha psuka, but Rabbi Akiva Eger is not someone to be dismissive of, and he says that this is it's kind of the same idea as the matseva. So if you're going to do this, go like this. Do it a little awkwardly, but don't do it like this, okay? According to Rabbi Akiva Eger. That's just a kind of rabbinic PS on this idea. So you hear the question the Ramban asks, why is a matseva a no-no, and why is a mizbeach okay? Okay? So he's going to now describe a fundamental difference between a matseva and a mizbeach, and that theologically, philosophically, one is acceptable and the other is not. So he gives an example. V'nira dihidei ksiv, in Malachim Aleph, v'yikach Eliyahu shtei mesrei avanim, kimispar shiftei b'nei Yisrael, asher Hashem diber asher elav, le'mor Yisrael yesh mechot. In other words, Eliyahu built a mizbeach, but a mizbeach is built from multiple stones. And he took 12 stones. Symbolically, he made his altar of 12 stones to represent the unified strength of Am Yisrael, of all of the Jewish people represented by the Yud Beit Shvatim, the 12 tribes. Hare she'avnei mizbeach hein bedugmat shiftei Yisrael. The stones of this very important altar, this mizbeach, was a dugma of the Jewish people in toto. Shehem kulam ki'ish echad. In other words, took the entire unit of Jewish people, 12 different tribes, and put them together into one unity. V'zeh shesayim ha-pasuk, and that's what the intent of the last part of the verse says, Yisrael yesh mecha, your name will be Yisrael, sheshem Yisrael hu kolel. Shem Yisrael is a kolel, it's a collective. In fact, I suspect that the word collective comes from the Hebrew word kol. You know, there are many words that you look in the dictionary, I've mentioned this many times, and they'll say Old Latin, or Old French, or Greek. But really, the origin, like, for example, what's a good example? Pikiyum, the Hebrew word mefunak. A mefunak is someone who is pikiyum, right? There are loads of examples. I don't know why I only thought of this one, but...
Tourist.
Pardon me?
Tourist. A tourist.
A tourist, excellent. A tourist, la tour et aris, right? So these are obviously the sources, Lashon Kodesh, right? But the dictionary is not aware of that. The compilers of the dictionary, they're not, I don't know if they, even if they were interested in it, even if they were aware of it, good possibility that they wouldn't put it in and they'd ignore it. In any case, so that's a matseva. That's a mizbeach. It represents a collective. It actually represents a synthesis between the individual, the yachid, and the grand enterprise of Klal Yisrael. Everybody, the tzibur, the community, and the individual. Both the synthesis of these two ideas are crucial for our survival, right? He says, continues, Kamo shekatuv b'tikunei HaZohar, he's quoting the Kabbalists, that they say, smola v'el yamina, from left to right. In other words, whatever that means. I mean, it's beyond my pay scale, but this is whatever it means, left and right. Although, I will tell you that the words in Hebrew for left and right really represent the whole cosmos. Because yamin, you take the letters of yamin, it's min Hashem, yud to yud, min Hashem, yamin, and smile is El, right, Sham Kel, there is God. So Min Hashem, Sham El, right, Samoil. You mean, so like, it could be what this Zohar is trying to say. I don't know. But in any case, Loha wrote this, but this is indicative of the fact that Avodat Yisrael, b'mizbeach, when the Jews use an altar, mizbeach, L'Hashem Yitbarach, for God, he af sheyesh l'kol echad b'china b'fnei atzmo, every individual has his day, has his worship, has his participation. Af al pikei nasim kulam ki ish echad, but they were made into one unified force. Right? That is the chiddush of Mizbeach. It is integrated. It is a synthesis of the yachid and the rabbim of the Jewish people. Deprat lo yuchal b'shum ofen l'gesher el Hashem Yitbarach. An individual cannot reach God alone. D'kamosh Hashem Yitbarach me'ir l'kol ha'olam kula v'hashva achat, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in one sweep, relates to the entire world. Ken katuv, e'efshar l'geshet el avodato rak klal loprat. So, we need that unity. We need the synthesis. We need the individual. Each one of us needs the tzibur, right? V'hu sheyeh HaKlal Kulo Ke'echad, Lo Nifradim Zeh Mizeh. And the unification means that every individual becomes part of the collective whole. V'zeh Remez B'Mizbeach. That's the Mizbeach. Shekol Ha'avanim Yachad, all of the stones together, Nasu Mizbeach Echad, make one Mizbeach. So that should be continued, right? So that shouldn't be disallowed. Aval Matseva, a pillar, Shehi Evin Achat, which is only one stone, that's what the original pillars were, one stone, Nesra Livnei Yisrael. They became forbidden to the Jewish people. Even though, he's going to talk about, we did at one point not only use a Mizbeach, right, which now makes sense according to our theology, but we even use the Matseva. Lohorot She'efshar Shetiyeh Avodatam Mitzad HaPrat. The reason why today a matzeva is not allowed is to demonstrate that, you know, you can't make your own religion. You've got to be, you know, somebody once said, you know, I once read an article by a woman. She said, I don't like Judaism. My name is Sheila. I'm going to make Sheilaism. You know, everybody has, unfortunately, we live in such a world today that you make it up as you go along, right? So it's not about Sheilaism. That's why the Matseva is out. Aye, so you'll tell me that what about the Avot? Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they had Matsevot. Aval bimei Avot, in the time of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, shekol echad mehem haya klal. Avram was the embodiment, and Yitzchak and Yaakov were the embodiment of all of Klal Yisrael. Their unit, their individuality was also a collective. Kemoshe Katuv, and he quotes a pasuk in Yecheskel, Tanakh. Echad Hashem Avraham. Ubi Yaakov Ktiv. Shivim Nefesh. When the Torah describes Yaakov's family, it says 70 Nefesh. Not lo nefashot, 70 souls. But Yaakov was a unity of one Nefesh, even though he was multiple souls. Ubi Medrash, and he quotes a Medrash. Ma Kodesh Baruch Hu Ktiv Bei, what does it say about God? V'nizgav Hashem Levado, Yaakov, Hashem is alone. Af B'Yaakov Ktiv Bei, it says about him, V'yivater Yaakov Levado. Yaakov remained alone after that night. But it means that his unity and his oneness were together, that he was a collective of all of the future potential of the Jewish people. Al Kain, Haita Matseva Ahuva Bimei Avot. So Matseva was beloved to God in the times of the Avot. It was that Matseva represented the integrated synthesis of collective of Rabim of Tzibur and individual. Ach Achakach, but afterwards Shaknanim Asu Achok, that the Knanim, the Canaanites, made it into a law of idol worship. Vehem Einam Klaliim. Idol worship is the antithesis of Klal, of Etzibur. Shehem anafim mit pardim. Idol worship, you know, the purpose of idol worship was to appease the gods so that I can do what I want. That was idol worship. It was an individual. I want to appease the gods. It wasn't a collective. There was no minion in idol worship. They might have davened together, but it was every man for himself. The whole purpose of idol worship was to appease the gods so that they'll let me do what I want to do. Right? So, Kemoshe Katuv Be'esav. So, whereas by Yaakov it says, Shivim Nefesh, by Esav, even his own family is described as Sheish, six people, Sheish Nefashot. Right? By Esav. Plural. Right? Lehem Shayechet Matseva. So that's a Matseva, it's for them. Go to the next paragraph. Ubeze yuvnu divrei ha-medrash. Now he concludes by explaining for us a fascinating medrash. There's a medrash at the beginning of this week's parsha. You will see. Look in the chumash. There are six exhortations to the judge, right? Six things that the judges are supposed to do, right? Lo tateh mishpat. Don't pervert judgment. That's one. Lo takir panim, don't show favorites, right? And in halacha, in law, it's much deeper than you think. You know, because a poor guy and a rich guy come in, you might want to favor the rich guy, you might want to favor the poor guy, right? But that's not appropriate. One should not even say hello. One's not allowed to meet with one of the litigants if the other litigant is not present, etc., etc. Okay. Lo tikach shochad, not to take a bribe, and not to plant an asherah tree, right? Why is that listed? I'm gonna give three reasons, and asherah, when we finish this, I'm gonna mention for a moment the utility of planting this asherah tree. Asherah was a tree that, again, they worshipped also, but it was a very powerful looking tree. What was the reason that? But the last, then the fifth one is not to build a matseva. The judges were told not to have a matseva, right? Actually, and then lo takriv mum. Don't sacrifice something that has a blemish. Now it's interesting that all six of these prerequisites for judgment were also, in the Medrash says, apply to a king. The king of Israel, the Melech Yisrael, has to apply to these six principles, right? So he asks a question here. He's going to conclude, he's going to tie this, what we've said now, he's going to tie in with this Medrash. U'bezeh yuvanu, with this we can understand, Divrei HaMedrash, B'sheish ma'alot l'kisei Shlomo. Shlomo HaMelech had six steps going up to his throne, and each step of Shlomo HaMelech's throne represented one of these six principles. Chamishit, the fifth one, as I pointed out, Lo takim lecha matzeva. Don't build a pillar. Ulechuri says, Bilti muvan ma'inyin ze lemelech. What does this have to do with a king? I can understand the other things, not to take a bribe, right? Not to twist judgment and so on. But Asherah also, we'll see in a minute. But why is the matseva a no-no for a king? What does it have to do with Malchus, with his dominion? Oh, so ach, hanal yuvan. Now it makes sense, based on what we've said. De melech hu ma'ached et klal Yisrael. The task of the Jewish king is to bring together the Jewish people. V'hamelech hu mitzad haklal. He represents the total dynamics of the klal of the Jewish people. V'nemar v'yehi b'yishurin melech b'hitaseif rosh hayam. That the king is to gather together the people. They have to be unified. The king's job is to unify Klal Yisrael. Val zehaya hachruz lo takim lecha matseva. And that's the significance, that a king is not allowed to build a matseva. Lohorot lo dat the kol inyan malchuto hu rak mitzad haklal. Nothing personal. It's not about me. It's not about the king. It's not about a matseva. He can't. The Jewish kingship rejects the matseva principle. V'lo yitgayeh, and he should not become proud. Al hatzibur, he shouldn't be yitgayeh on the tzibur. He shouldn't lord over the tzibur. V'lo yeprat b'fnei atzmo, he shouldn't become an individual force on his own. V'yikemo halev, but he should be like the heart. B'toch ha'ivaru, right? The heart cannot exist without the rest of the body. Shelo yitaken halev levado, bilti ha'ivaru. Right, so we say, Ein Melech below Am, Ve'ein Am, ultimately, below Melech, right? So that's the idea here. Okay, I think it's a beautiful Shem Yishmul. I want to talk about Asherah for a minute. I think there are three reasons that we can suggest why an Asherah is not allowed for a king. Because the palaces used to be beautified with trees. That's what a palace, in ancient days, a palace looked like. It had lots of trees, gardens in front of the palace. So a garden, a tree represents externality, external beauty. The king, or the Beit Din, the court, has to be dealing with pnim, with the internal reality of life, not the externalities, not the materialistic external forces in life. But Torah is about internalizing. So therefore, we don't have to put up something beautiful outside. Okay? That's one approach, right? The pnim. And then the second approach really is that the palaces of the non-Jewish kings were have trees. The third idea is that an Asherah represents a tree, is kind of a dugma for nature, right? A tree grows based on every rule of nature. That's what a tree is. It depends totally on Mother Nature, right? Nature is the polar opposite of tzedek, of righteousness, of judgment, of justice. Nature is the survival of the fittest. That's what nature is. That's what nature is all about. The survival of the fittest. In the animal kingdom, in the plant kingdom, depending on the weather, what's the most fit, right? There's no mercy. A storm, a tsunami has no mercy. Whoever survives is the fittest, right? That's what nature is all about, survival of the fittest. The Torah and tzedek, righteousness and justice, is 180 degrees in the opposite direction, the polar opposite, where the Torah has to create a level playing field for the weak and the strong. It's not about survival of the fittest, the Torah. It's righteousness, it's justice, it's tzedek. It's a level playing field. It's the opposite of survival of the fittest, and therefore an asherah does not belong by a melech, by a king, or by a bezdin, by a court. Okay, let's go to number two. This is the Vilna Gaon. It is an ingenious comment of his, and it is on the pasuk of Lo Yar Belo Nashim Velo Yasor Levavo. A king is not allowed to have many wives, right? Not more than 18 wives, all right? Go figure. But that's it. So what happened? What happened? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak mipnei ma lo nitgalu tamei Torah. Why does the Torah not give reasons for its mitzvahs? Very rare exceptions does the Torah tell you. Here, there's a reason. Don't have many wives, v'lo yasur levavo, because they will influence you, right? And obviously they'll influence him in many directions, right? Now the Gemara speaks about a fellow who had two wives. He had a young wife and an old wife, older wife. So the older wife pulled out his black hairs, and his younger wife pulled out his gray hairs. So he was bald. He had nothing, right? It's obviously a metaphor, a mashal in the Gemara, but it's a brilliant metaphor, right? About people influencing other people. In this case, it's wives, okay? All right, so here, the Torah gives a reason for the mitzvah. But the rabbis say, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, we have something funny here?
I said that's our excuse.
That's our excuse? That's not your excuse.
I've been saying the previous example, I've been pulled from pillar to post.
From pillar to post, very good. Oh, well, you guys are good. That's even better than, that's not just English humor, that's good, I like it, okay. So, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak mitnei ma lo nitgalu tamei Torah. Why does the Torah refrain from giving reasons for mitzvahs? Shehare shtei mikraot nitgalu tamei. Because there are two psukim where the reason was given. And nichshol behen gadol ha'olam. And one of the greatest human beings fell because of it. K'tiv, it says, lo yar belo nashim. Don't have many wives. Amar Shlomo Melech, Chacham Mikol Adam, Chacham Mikol Adam, Ani Arbe, V'lo Asur. I'll have many wives. I'll have 100 wives, and they're not gonna influence me, right? Uktiv, and it says, Vayi Le'et Ziknat Shlomo Nashav Hitu Et Levavo. So the pasuk says in Melachim that unfortunately his wives did have a negative influence on him. Okay, lefi zeh yesh lefaresh. Now I want to explain something else the Gaon says. I'm not going to get into this sticky business of 18 wives versus 100 wives, but listen to this. According to this idea, that it's not a good idea for the Torah to give a reason for the mitzvah. Yesh lefaresh. I want to explain ma de'ita b'masechet Shabbat. I want to explain another chapter in the Talmud, a famous passage in the Gemara Shabbos. Lo yikre la'or haner, the Gemara says, lo yikre la'or haner shemayita. On Shabbos, one should not read by a candle, because he might, as he's reading, he might pick up the candle and move it, right? That's the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, certain rabbi, ani ekra v'lo atet. I'm going to read by a lamp on Shabbos, and I will not move. Hamachat, one time, kara, he was reading, ubikesh lahatot, and he wanted to move the lamp. Amar, he stopped himself and he said, kame gedolim divrei chachamim. How brilliant are the words of the rabbis. Shahayu omrim lo yikre laor aner. Who say, don't read by the light of a lamp. So the question is, what does he mean? They said, lo yikra lo'or aner. It's the last part that he said was their brilliance, no? Shema yitai, that you might move it, right? So the Gaon says, no, there's no mistake here, right? You read the Gemara, this seems to be a mistake. That he should have said, how brilliant are the rabbis, they said, don't read by the light of a lamp because you'll move it. But he doesn't say that. They said, don't, how brilliant are the rabbis because they said, don't read by the light of a lamp. So listen to the Gaon. Listen to the Vilna Gaon. Venera Kavanah, I'll tell you what his Kavanah is. That's the Gemara. The Gemara is commenting on the Mishnah. V'hinei Mishnah, the Mishnah that preceded this Gemara, that the Gemara is talking about, Nemar Stam, Lo Yikra Lo'or Haner. The Mishnah simply said, do not read by the light of a lamp. No explanation. It was the rabbis in the Gemara who added that phrase. B'li Netinatam, without a reason, V'siba, Al Isur HaKriya, for the reason of reading Lo'or Haner. Ula, the Braita, but in the Gemara, Mefurash Hatam, it explains the reason. Shemi Yita, because you might move it. You might touch it. Rabbi Yishmael Biroto, Sibar HaYisr. When Rabbi Yishmael saw the reason for the Yisr, Chishav Bedato, he thought, Ani Ekra, Velo Ateh. You know, I'll read and I won't move it. Kederek Shamar Shlomo HaMelech Alav Hashem, just like Shlomo HaMelech said, Ani Arbe Velo Asor, I will have many wives and they won't influence me. Lesof, Achar Shenichshal Rabbi Yishmael, after Rabbi Yishmael said, oops, and he touched the lamp, whatever he did, Amar Kame Gedolim Divrei Chachamim. He's not talking about the rabbis in the Talmud, the Gemara. He's talking about the rabbis in the Mishnah. How brilliant are the Tanoim, the authors of the Mishnah. Hainu Divrei Chazal B'Mishnah. She'amru Lo Yikra La'or Haner, period. V'lo Natnu Hatam, they did not give a reason, Allah Yisra, for the prohibition. Ki al yidei netinat hatam, because by giving the reason, hayalo makom litot, so there was, he gave reason and room for him to maneuver and sin. The ilmale kein, if they would have left good enough alone, the brilliance of the Balei Mishnah of the Tanoim, lo haya mekil ba'atzmo lavor et gzeret chacham, he would never have touched the lamb. So that's what he meant. Come out, how brilliant are divrei chachamim, who Stam said, don't learn by a light, period. By a lamp, period. Incidentally, there's a new Shabbos lamp now.
Yeah, Shabbos.
That's from Toronto. That was invented in Toronto. But there's a newer one. I don't know where it was invented. Is it here? I don't know. Is it in Israel? So it's a fantastic lamp. And it's not expensive. And it's a brilliant, it's a very bright light. It's not a bulb, it's like a fluorescent, incandescent light. Not incandescent, it's not fluorescent. Anyway, you can move you're allowed to move the stem, but you can't move the whole lamp. So it has sponges underneath that the lamp stays still, and you can move the top. And also there's a cover, you know, to close the light completely. You just cover it completely. Anybody that's interested, we can get the info to David and he can email it out to everybody. Mm. Okay. Pardon me? Is it a Somit invention? It sounds like Somit. It sounds like Somit, but I don't know.
So is that improved?
It has the good housekeeping and the Somit approval. Okay, we have time for one more piece on page 2. This is from Rav Schwab. V'amar aleihem Shema Yisrael. Oh, this is the Meshuach Milchama, the Kohen whose job it is to the chaplain of the Jewish army, right? And V'amar aleihem Shema Yisrael. He tells them before they go to war, Shema Yisrael. Atem krevim hayom lemilchama. You're going out to war. Al evechem, against your enemies. Al yirach levavchem. Don't be weak of heart. Al tiru, don't be afraid. Val tech bezu, val te arzu mifneim, mifneim. Don't run away. Don't be afraid. You're Shema Yisrael. What's the Shema Yisrael? Why does he say Shema Yisrael? So Rashi says, like, what does he say Shema Yisrael? Rashi doesn't miss a beat. Afilu ein bechem schut ela kriat Shema bilvad. Even if you as a soldier, you're not from, you don't keep Shabbos, you don't keep kosher. Right, but you say Shema Yisrael. When I saw this, I'm reminded of so many not yet religious Israelis that I see kissing mezuzahs, and they make a point of it. You know, if they walk in, they forget, they go back to kiss the mezuzah. Right, It's a wonderful thing to see, right? But this is, you know, our holy Jewish people, right? So if all this guy, this soldier has is Shema Yisrael, Bivav, Kedai Atem Sheyashiyatka, God will save you. That's what the Meshuach Melchama, the chaplain, is saying to them. V'hu Memra de Rabbi Yochanan, B'shem Rav Shim Bar Yochai, B'gemora Sota. And this is a statement by big rabbis in the Talmud. But I have a problem with it. I have a big problem with it. V'kashi, here's my problem. Shari Lahalan, the Gemara later on says, Tanan Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer, what does it mean, Hayarei V'racha Levav, don't be afraid? What's the guy afraid of? Zehu Amit Yarei. So there's one opinion, it means that he's knocked. He's just afraid to go to battle. He's afraid. So go home. If he can't get himself together, you know, he should go home, right? But there's another interpretation. Hamit Yarei Min Ha'averot Shebiyado. The guy's afraid. He's petrified, the soldier, because he has a lot of sins, right? He's got some unsolved, right? This is the month of Elul, right? So this is the time of the year that we deal with this self, this introspection, right? So he's got some unfinished business with God. So Visham Isa Kiman Azla Hadatanya. What's the example the rabbis give? Very strange example. Let's say he has an avera sachbein tefillah l'tefillah. When he puts on his tefillin in the morning, you know, when the men put on the tefillin, they're not supposed to talk between the bracha on their hand and the bracha on their head. So this guy may be talked between putting the tefillin on the yad and the tefillin on the head. Now, if I were writing this Gemara, I would bet a better example than this, right? This is the guy's afraid because he spoke between putting on his tefillin in his hand and his tefillin, right? So what is going on here, right? So let's see. He has one approach. I'm going to mention another approach when we finish, but from the Avnei Nezer, actually, from the father of the Shem Mishmuel. But let's first see what he says. Aveira hi biyado. It is a serious infraction, right? V'chozer alea me'orcha melchama. And he has to go home for this, right? Can't take a chance, right? By the way, you know, we take these things so much for granted. But, you know, there's a story. The Vilna Gaon was in jail for a very short period of time. Informers put the Vilna Gaon in jail, right? And when he was in jail, they threw him in with some Jewish guy who was in jail. And they threw in a pail of water with a ladle. And the Gaon is sitting there with, we just did the Vilna Gaon, right? And he's sitting there with this Jew. And the Jew takes the ladle and he starts to drink. And the Gaon says, a bracha, shakol, shakol. And he looks at the guy and says, Rebbe, if you knew what I've done in my lifetime, you would leave me alone. So the guy says, no. After 120 years, you're going to have to answer as to why you did not say Shahakal on this glass of water. Everything counts. What we think is small is not so small. What we think is big sometimes is small, right? So here, Keman Kareb Yosef Lili, Vitzarach Bir. So here's, he's asking a different question. He's not asking why this mitzvah is the one that's chosen. I'm going to discuss that in a minute. But Tzarech Bir, Lami Yeshlo Lira, Miaveira Kala Chabiyado, Halo Zchut Kriyat Shema, Shachrit V'Arvit, Maspika Lehem LiYisrael, Kamo Shidan Rashbi. Weren't we just told that if this soldier said Shema Yisrael, he doesn't have to worry? So why is he worried about his Averas? He's saying Shema Yisrael. I should be protected with Shema Yisrael. So what Rav Shor wants to say is that this Avera is a function of Shema Yisrael. Tefillin relates to Shema Yisrael. That's what he's going to say. V'itakein, Shema sheyesh la'averot elu, koach la'akevet ha'nitzachon. These averas, this is one example, there are a number of them that are listed there, will affect his victorious soldiery. Hu mishum shenichlal behem chisorim beguf kriyat Shema. Do you know that talking between putting on your tefillin is an infringement on the mitzvah of Shema Yisrael? How so? Shasach bein tefillin shel yad l'tefillin shel rosh. Someone who talks between putting on these two tefillin, hari hu pegam b'kiyu mitzvah tefillin shelo. So he's destroyed his mitzvah of tefillin. And you know what? Levishat tefillin he tanai b'kriyat Shema ketikuna. Did you know that? That wearing tefillin is a prerequisite to the mitzvah of kriyat Shema. Kemaim Ramzal, the rabbis say, it's a Gemara in Brachas, Kol HaKorei Kriyat Shema, whoever reads Krishna, not for ladies, ladies don't have to worry about this, they can read Krishna without tefillin. But kol hakorei Krishna below tefillin, whoever reads Krishna without tefillin, ki'ilu made a dud sheker ba'atzma. He's giving false testimony. But the whole, everything you're saying in Krishna is about the oneness of God, and that he puts it on our forehead and on our arms, and you're not wearing them. So tefillin is impact on Shema. It means that you did not say Shema properly. So that's why the Gemara mentioned it.
So how do we say Shema?
Pardon?
You're not tefillin on tomorrow.
What?
You say Shema tomorrow.
I understand, but he's saying conceptually. It relates to Kriya Shema Shel Shacharit. You're right. But similarly, he gives other examples. For example, we have a halacha similar to this, which applies to all of us, men and women. V'chein hasach ben yishtabach liyotze. Person is not allowed to speak from yishtabach. Well, you're not allowed to speak during pesukah d'zimra, but one is not allowed to speak after yishtabach to yotze, by boruch. One should not speak. What's the reason for that? It's halacha in Shulchan Aruch. And the Mishnah Berurah talks about it. Shari tiknu chazal lomar psuke de zimra lahachin labirchat kriyashma. Because the whole psuke de zimra is sort of a prerequisite to reach the crescendo of the blessings of kriyashma and kriyashma itself. So there shouldn't be an interruption between the psuke de zimra and the kriyashma that comes after Bor. Imu mafsik b'nehem. So if one makes an interruption, hariu pogem b'kriyashma. He's affecting kriyashma itself. He says another example. The Mishnah says, Nasui Mamzeret, if a soldier is married to a Mamzeret, right? Hari he migalim she'enu kore kriyashma kara. He's not, obviously not saying kriyashma properly, because a person who's married to a Mamzeret is constantly living in sin, so to speak. So, shahari hein averot tadiriyot. They're constant averas. Shuhu over alein b'chol rega, he's transgressing every minute. Ve'ein hefech kabolas ol malchus shamayim shekri, which is the polar opposite of Shema, which is accepting the unity of God on me at all times. Okay, that's his take. I just want to add from the Avnei Nezer why this example that the Gemara gives is such a terrible thing that the soldier has to worry about. It's talking between the tefillin she'ad and the tefillin she'omash. So he says. He says an interesting thing. The tefillin shayad, it represents action, living according to Torah and mitzvot. The tefillin shel rosh represents how we think, our theology, our philosophy, right? The Jew, like, you know, somebody once said to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, I'm not a Lubavitcher Chassid, but somebody once, he said, do you do mitzvot? He said, Rabbi, I'm a Jew at heart. She said to him, you know, if you put all your pressure on your heart, you can have a heart attack. Mm-hmm. Spread the wealth, right? So someone who makes an interruption between his physical actions, his activities, and what he thinks, there's a separation between what he knows he should be doing and what he does, right? I know what's right, but I can't, just don't do it. That's a danger. That's a dangerous situation. That's the theological significance of speaking between the tefillin shel yad, which represent our actions as Jews, and the tefillin shel rosh, how we think as a Jew. Finally, just one more idea, which I think I've mentioned in the past, from Rav Kook, about the Jewish army and the Jewish chaplain, the Kohen Meshulach Machama. He points out that this is the only position of Kohen that is not hereditary. You know, positions of authority in Jewish life in the Torah are hereditary. There's a whole shaila whether a rabbi's son can take over his pulpit. Not so simple that he can. Not so simple that he can. But in Kahuna, the Kohen Gadol can be replaced by his son. Even the Kohen Gadol. But the Kohen Meshuach, the rabbi of the army, cannot be replaced by his son. Why is that hereditary? Why is that? So Rav Kook says, and I think it's significant, this idea comes from Rav Kook. He says, because a Jewish army is not forever. We don't live in Plato's society, the idyllic society where you have to have the army. The army is a necessity to life. Of course, when we're living the way we're living today, temporarily, we need an army. We need a good army. We need a holy army. And that's what Tzahal is, right? But Rav Kook is saying it's not forever. We long for the day that we will not have to have a Tzahal. That's why the position of Kohen Meshuach Melchama is not a hereditary position. We're hoping that this Kohen Meshuach will be the last Kohen Meshuach. That's Rav Kook. Okay. Very good. Pleasure. Wednesday night.